Welcome to Back to the Local Treble Clef, everyone. My name is May Lee, and I'm here with the Rythers, and they're my co-hosts for the evening. We're going to have a really cool episode talking about an album that they had me pick for them. And so I'm so curious to hear everyone's opinions about this. But first, we're going to talk about their new single coming out. It's called Pit Dunce, and it's coming out February 10th. And so let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the song. I listened to it a few times. I like it. I really like how you guys mix the doo-wop with the punk, and it kind of brings that whole, like, the Marx song. And So, you know, kind of, because you kind of have that too, and then now you have this one. So why don't you guys kind of talk about your inspiration of how this song came about?
Well, before the song came out, we came up with the idea for the live show gimmick of putting the tallest dunce cap we could make on somebody and having them stand in the middle of the crowd. When did we come up with that, Rick? Do you remember? Because I feel like it was a while before even the tour.
In
2021.
To be honest, I don't exactly remember. I thought it was, you know, pretty close to the tour and it happened then, but it may have been for those summer shows we played in 2021. Like, may have been around that time, and it didn't really come into fruition until the tour.
Yeah. I just know it was an idea for a while. Yeah, and yeah, I remember staying up late making the Pit Dunce cap, like, not too long before we left for the tour.
Right.
So that was about until then.
Yeah. It didn't come about until around that time. And even playing it, well, playing some variation of it live, was, you had asked about the doo-wop part. And I think the gag was that we were doing this sort of pageant thing to introduce the pit dunce and put a hat on top of them. Naturally that is, you know, doo-wop, you know, old rock and roll inspired. And then it sort of took off from there. Cause originally we were just playing, we were playing Kill the Monster for the song that we would do the pit dunce.
We'd do like the doo-wop-y part, and then it would just, a lot of times we didn't even have like a plan, like, okay, we're going to stop here. We would just kind of fade out. Chu and I would just go, all right, cool. And I would start Kill the Monster. Like, all right, cool. We're rolling and do it.
So then you finally were like, let's just make this song happen.
I think the song actually happened because I made that picture. There's like a image we posted right before the tour that's like, it's just a black background. It has the pit dunce cap is like most of the image. And then there's like my eyes at the bottom looking very like upset.
Oh, okay.
Like, and staring at the camera.
The caption said, it must have said mosh or pay the price, which is a lyric in the song.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. And I remember saying like, this looks like an album cover or something. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a lot of, I think it happened this way. I can't remember, but.
Well, I do remember getting the lyrics, and I think the basic formatting. So a lot of the times, at least more recently, Robert will write like a demo of the music for us to figure out and then jam to on our own and then bring into practice. So I remember when he sent me the demo of it, And so I remember I was driving and I clicked it and put it onto, if I was using the connector for the car. So I was listening to it on my speakers and I listened to it. So I remember when that happened, that was pretty cool. So
that shitty garage band demo.
Yeah. Always. That's always how they start.
Every time I do those demos, I'm like recording the vocals, like in my bathroom on my phone, like at 12 at night or something. So it's always me like straining, kind of being quiet, but not really. It's pretty awkward. So
No, that's when the best inspiration comes. That's why I always forget everything, because all of my inspiration comes at like 3 a.m. and I'm like, I need to do this. I should add this to that. And then the next day I'm like, wait, what? What was I supposed to do?
That's why you have to write it down or put it in your notes in your phone. Or like,
but I play the drums. It's so hard to do that.
I know, but you have to force yourself.
I remember you had, so maybe this adds to it. With the combination of doo-wop to that punk, like in the end of the song and in the beginning of the song from the punk transitions, right? It has that, those sort of punctuations.
Oh, the like alarm sound, the wah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that kind of fits with what Ken was saying about sort of transitioning into Kill the Monster, because that's sort of, a little bit more abrupt than maybe other things we typically would do, because those don't, there's nothing particularly doo-woppy about Kill the Monster. And then we just made it even more apparent with this song, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It was that idea of pageantry, mm-hmm. like a Miss America parody, and then going into a moshable song.
I think we were talking about wanting it to be very, or at least inspired by like SoCal hardcore.
Yeah, I was, when we were on that tour, I think I had like a thing for, I was listening to DI mm-hmm. a lot. And so that was definitely an inspiration for the harder part of the song. I looked at my notes here. I wrote the lyrics for that in January 2022. Mm. So it was well after the tour.
Yeah.
And I think it all came together real quick. Like once I sat down to make a song, it was like, lyrics, sent them to Rick. He loved them or whatever. And then I made a shitty demo and it just went from there.
I feel like that song has probably been one of our quickest songs to write, at least in my opinion. Like we performed it. So we did a birthday show for me last year in February. And that was our first or second time playing it. And then we just kind of tweaked it up a little bit more from there. And then we were ready to record.
Yeah.
That's cool. That means you guys are getting more seasoned. So Robert, you just write the lyrics and then you sing it into a recording. Do you play an instrument in the background while you're doing that for what you send to everybody? Or is it just like your a cappella melody?
No, going on? I program like bass, drums, and guitar on GarageBand.
Oh, okay.
So they don't sound great, but they sound serviceable.
You mean drums with a three-arm drummer?
Yeah. I was just going to say the best part is when I make drums and I'm not paying attention and Rick will be like, this sounds cool, but it's impossible to play or whatever. I need a third or fourth arm to play it. And then the same thing with guitar, like guitar on the mobile GarageBand and probably GarageBand in general is kind of terrible and hard to do, make sound good. So it's kind of jarring, but you know, again, it's just trying to get a point across.
As Chewy kind of smirks.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm like, this octave is completely physically impossible because it's like you're at one point a part of the neck and you're all the way up on the other side. It's like that's physically impossible to do unless I had like these alien fingers, but I don't.
So. Well, an extra arm is just going to grow out of your chin. Yeah. That's why the beard is bad.
Something that comes over the top.
Well, and then I get off it.
Go ahead.
I got off easy because for the most part, I just listened to it and I'm just like, all right, I know the chord progression. Now I can just make up whatever I want pretty much.
Yeah.
And it works out.
Yeah. Well, also like I play the bass too. So like,
yeah,
I'm actually have a better idea of what I'm doing when I make that. And sometimes like, I don't know about this song. This song may have been like Kenny might've just kind of embellished a couple things. I think it was mostly done. But like for some songs, I either do like a very straightforward bass or I'll just tell them it's just like make it work, change it if you want or whatever.
Make it spooky.
It depends. I guess it depends on how married to like a weird riff I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's funny because the weird alarm sound is the part where I'm like, is Robert married to that? And he was, but now I like it. Now I get it.
Okay, so inspirations. I ripped that off from a song directly. Or I don't know. I was inspired by a song directly.
It doesn't sound the same, so it's not a ripoff. But
yeah, but yeah, you can hear it. You can hear where I got it from. It's like this. There's this Japanese band I really like called Buck Tick. And they, from I think their first album, or no, it's like their, it's one of their first albums. It's like the early 80s called Iconoclasm. And I think that's the name of the song too. It's like the first song on the album. And it opens with a sound like that. Like this alarm kind of sound that I'm pretty sure is played on the guitar, but I thought it sounded so cool that I wanted to use it in something or do something similar.
So then is that Chewy's job to make that sound, or what, how do you guys add that live?
He did it. He did it. We almost did use a sample, I think, but Chewy pulled it off.
Oh, cool.
It's funny because I remember that time we played it live. We had just practiced all of that stuff. Or no. We everyone else except for Chewy showed up to the practice beforehand because it was an impromptu thing. We didn't have to do that. I just wanted to practice, right? And we did everything really great the whole show, and then we got to that song and it was like, okay, we're ready. And we're looking at Chewy just waiting for his part to happen. And he totally spaced on it. And then we kept going. But like there's a video of it. And we just literally, you could see us kind of looking at him like, wait, what?
What show was that? Was that your birthday show?
That was my birthday, yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
Well, that's the one amazing thing about you guys, though, that, you know, obviously not a lot of people know is that you guys don't have regular rehearsals with each other because half of you live in another county. And, you know, so that's really cool that you guys are dedicated to do your homework and sharpen the songs and practice at home and then get together when you guys get together and rehearse that way. I mean, that's amazing.
I never thought about it that way.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, being in a band myself, it's like we practice once a week and you forget stuff after a while if you're not always doing it. And I mean, we're doing covers, you guys are doing originals, so that's hard because you're trying to collaborate and add these things, your own touches to stuff. And I just can't, you know, like that's some super dedication and creativity, and I'm just really in awe over that you guys can put all that together, not having like a regular rehearsal schedule. So
it's shocked people for sure.
I'm kind of shocked right now because I never thought about that.
Yeah, me neither. Like now that I'm just like shrinking everything down, looking at everything, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of crazy what we could bang out in like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then just not see each other for like 2 more weeks.
Yeah.
And then it's the communication. The communication definitely helps, I think.
Yeah.
We have to be apart or we'd be too powerful.
You're like the Transformers or
Megazord.
Yeah.
Ultron.
Yeah.
Ultron.
A little random aside, but it kind of what Robert said reminded me of it. There's this concept going out online where people in the horror punk community were saying, oh yeah, I want to make a video game. Who would be in this video game? So they were naming all the underground horror punk people, right? And I was like, if the writers were on there, we would all be one character. So it would be like Robert, and then you click a button and it switches to me, and I'm a different fighting style and Ken and Chu, right? So I kind of imagine it sort of like that, you know, we're symbiotic enough, I think, to get things done.
Yeah.
Just like Castlevania 3.
Yeah.
There's a little thing to it. Anyway, but yeah, it's kind of funny because I didn't think about it either. Thank you, Kenny. It is funny because I didn't think about it either until last year when I was playing with another band that wanted to practice weekly or more than once a week if possible. But it was just like man, weekly's a lot for me because I'm so used to practicing once, maybe twice a month.
Yeah, and that's a weird switch too, because I'm in another band now playing twice a week, and it's different. It's like, wait, we can do this?
Yeah. And then when you guys have shows, you guys are great. So, you know, that just goes to show.
Smoke and mirrors.
Don't tell anybody.
Machines and mirrors.
Yeah. So speaking of shows, you guys have one coming up in February. And who wants to talk a little bit about that show coming up? Because there's quite a few bands playing in that one.
Yeah.
It's all homie bands.
Yep.
All your homies.
Yeah, we got All Monster Review, Butt Candy, and 13 Wolves.
Oh, that'll be cool. That's a good... Yeah, I can't wait to go to that because I want to see 13 Wolves perform because I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
Yeah.
Oh, they're awesome.
I think one of the band members is the brother of Sir Gravy from the Creepy Creeps.
Yeah.
So... And I met him at one of the Creepy Creeps show, and I've been meaning to see 13 Wolves. I'm glad that they're going to be at your next show because I'm like, okay,
now I
there you go.
Yeah, we haven't played with them since I joined, so I'm super stoked.
Oh, cool.
We haven't.
Nope. Huh. No, but I saw them before. Yeah. I joined.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so that show is on February.
That's on the 10th. So we're actually the show is the single release show. We're playing at the Ken Club. I think it's at 9 p.m., 21 and up. And I think it's a $10 show. That'll be fun, you know.
Yeah.
Ken Club is a good sized space. If a bunch of people pack it, then it doesn't look empty.
Pack it.
That place.
It also makes me feel special that we're playing a place called Ken Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's the Ken Club.
Ken's Club.
Yeah.
It's funny. You had said that it's a show with homie bands, but I can't remember the last show that we played that wasn't with homie bands. We kind of always play bands that we're friends with. I mean, lately. even the Blitz Kid one we played was with other bands we're friends with.
That's true.
Yeah.
I feel like that's especially with the punk, you know, genre. I feel like it's smaller where you're at, you know, and you guys get to know each other and so you have all of your support and your friends, and it's fun to play with them.
Yeah,
you know all your secrets.
It's a small world.
I've never seen All Monster Review play, so I am interested in watching them. I've just hung out with the singer before, or they've come to our shows. So
yeah, always cool to see them.
Well, cool. So everyone on February 10th, if you're in the San Diego area, please come to the Kensington Club and we will all be there to support the Writhers.
If you're not in the San Diego area, get to the San Diego area.
And
slide on down.
And whoever's lucky enough to wear the Pit Dunce hat that night for your release of your single, I mean, that's going to be cool.
Yeah, I didn't talk to you about this, Rick, but I was thinking whoever gets to be the Pit Dunce that night gets a free pin.
I was going to say that right now.
Yeah.
So you heard it first here.
And I'll buy the Pit Dunce a free beer or whatever they're drinking.
There we go.
A free drink.
I was going to say, why are they getting rewarded? I mean, they're the reasons why we might get killed. So
yeah, that's true.
The destruction of the world is on their shoulders.
We'll see how well they do as a Pit Dunce.
it's like a final meal kind of thing. It's like your last meal, your last drink.
The last rites, the last arrive.
All right, so let's get into now the co-hosting part of it, where you guys, we're going to review the Go-Go's Beauty and the Beat album. And so I don't know if anyone got to like watch a documentary or like read any history about the Go-Go's, but they were originally, and this is why I picked this band for you guys to listen to, is they were originally a punk band. Mm. And, you know, and then they became more poppy, but so they were part of like the Southern California, like LA punk scene, and with different members at first. And then, you know, they eventually changed members and stuff like that. So their band members consist of Belinda Carlisle, who's the lead vocalist, and Charlotte Caffey. She's the lead guitarist, keyboard, and she actually wrote the majority of their music, of their songs. And Gina Schock is their drummer, and Kathy Valentine plays bass, and Jane Wheedland, she's their rhythm guitar, and she also wrote quite a few of their songs as well. And that Beauty and the Beat was debuted in 1981, and so it's, you know, in 2021, it was 40 years old, and that is, I believe, the year that they finally got inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Nice. So, it's kind of cool to hear their history, because they're actually the first female, all female band to write their own music and play their own instruments. So, yeah. So I don't know how much of the history you guys dove into.
I feel like that's not true though.
Because, really?
Because a couple weeks ago, before we chose this topic, I've been on a garage rock kick, and I was curious, and I searched all female garage rock bands. There's some older bands that, from what I can tell, they write their own music. But if, you know, I'll concede none of them ever got big enough to like be remembered that well. But yeah, their Go-Go's definitely seem like one of the more famous ones. There was another band that I found when I was looking up before, and turns out they were like an influence of the Go-Go's. Fanny. Has anyone ever heard of Fanny? They were also an LA band for like a decade before the Go-Go's.
Nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were more of like a, at least Wikipedia calls them a hard rock band, but it's just like rock band.
I was going to say, would that be like a proto-punk type thing if they were younger? But or sorry.
I feel like it's more like proto-ACDC and stuff like that.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah,
but an all-girl band.
Interesting to know what kind of music, because it's, yeah.
Like sure.
1970.
It would have been 1970.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So interesting to know what kind of music that they played.
It's funny that you mention, because I kind of assumed they were a punk band from this album, right?
Because
You had said that they were a punk band and then they became more pop. I'm like, you can clearly, at least I could clearly hear the punk influence.
It's very Ramones. Like, like 77 pop punk.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you guys if you guys could hear the punk influence in it. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, because I mean, you know, for me growing up and being a fan of theirs, of course, at the time, you know, you don't know that, you know, at my age at that time, I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, this is punk. Mm-hmm. But knowing that they were a punk band now, you know, knowing a lot about music, when I did re-listen to this, I was like, I kind of hear the formula there. Mm-hmm. And so I was...
Go-Go's are pop punk legends. They should have played When We Were Young Fest. They should have headlined.
They should have been on Warped Tour.
Find me in the Go-Go's pit.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if there were a Go-Go's pit, if they still played live.
Yeah.
You know, like if you just threw the Go-Go's into like Vakken, like Metal Fest, like the biggest one in history, it just threw them right in the middle. Metalheads would be like, oh, sweet. And then you like, just like dance into the pit.
Oh yeah, totally.
I feel like people would.
Yeah. Definitely. Oh
yeah. I did that with the Village People one time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say, the other day I was listening to it and I texted Robert and I was like, it's interesting how this song, it was Tonight. Sounds like it could totally be like a TSOL song. If it was like slightly spookier, it would be TSOL, at least in my ears.
Yeah.
So I can definitely hear that punk.
And then I sent you an old recording of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like hunting for like old demos or live recordings way before, like years before the album came out. Because like, it's not like I hate it, but you can definitely tell like they smooth the edges off.
Right.
Like in the, you know, production room on the album. And so I was like, I wanted to hear what they sounded like before they got a record deal.
Kind of more raw.
It is very like, much more raw.
Yeah. I found, like raw Go-Go's black metal demo.
I found a live recording of Tonight from 1979.
Oh, wow.
And I found a song that they recorded like at a show in San Francisco called Fun with Rope. Uh-huh. And that song's pretty banging and stuff.
What were you going to say, Chewie?
Well, I think that's what Kathy had said in one of the interviews they had done about the album, was that they said, we thought we were a punk band, you know, but they ended up, you know, pioneering a new sound all together.
Right.
You know, they thought like we were going for more of a punky sound, in her words. And, you know, I'm quoting there. And she says, you know, we thought we were destroyed as a band because of it. That's what she said. And then she later on says, as the album started climbing the charts, she says, oh, we became friends with that producer again because now we're making money.
It's interesting to think about that.
Money's the only thing, but she thought that the band's ruined. We're going to have to go and venture off and do other things.
I wonder if the time was helpful for that, because you think about like bands in the 90s or the late 80s, like Green Day, right? Who everyone stopped like not everyone, but a lot of the Berkeley kids would stop liking because they got popular in the 90s, right?
Right.
I wonder if that same sort of reaction would have happened, like if they would have been like, yeah, now I'm friends with the producer again because now we're big, or if they'd be like, you know, he made us sell out and now we're super big, you know.
I remember when the Go-Go's were a punk band, man.
Yeah.
I think the reason it happened was because, you know, at the same time they had, you know, the Ramones were really big at the time, and you know, so everybody was latching onto that. So I think naturally it was just a smooth transition.
Right.
I think that's what helped.
Yeah.
And bringing the Ramones into like the Go-Go's in a sense, you know, because the Ramones didn't really know how to play instruments. They started.
There is no more famous band with less musical talent than the Ramones in history, but damn, does it sound cool.
Yeah, and I mean, the Go-Go's admitted they didn't know how to play any instruments either when they first started. So, you know, obviously you have to figure out like a couple power chords or something that's going to work. And especially if they were in the punk scene, then you're going to only play like, what, five power chords and kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to me that with the Go-Go's, they have five members of the band. And you know, I feel like most punk formulas is like three. Well, back in the day, you know, was that
four?
Yeah, or four.
Max, maybe they had, four. Yeah,
they had that extra power because they had Joan of Arc in their band. Jay and their rhythm guitarist played Joan of Arc in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. That's how I first became aware of the Go-Go's.
Was that your hidden trivia fact you said you had?
Yeah, that was my one Go-Go's factoid.
Okay, I want to drop a factoid right now, because I thought this is what your factoid was, Kenny. You know what the Go-Go's name was originally?
What?
The Misfits.
Huh.
All right.
What?
That's what they were going to call themselves, and then I guess they realized, oh, that name's taken.
Isn't that crazy? Was it also influenced by the Marilyn Monroe movie, or?
I have no clue, but I just saw that it was going to be the Misfits, and then they changed it.
Yeah, and then they get sued by Jerry Only.
He had his finger on the trigger.
Well, then later on in the
80s, don't you do it.
There was a cartoon about girl bands, Gem and the Holograms, and their nemesis was the Misfits.
Yeah.
Nice. They could have based the Misfits on the Go-Go's.
Actually, what we don't know is that they are the Go-Go's.
I know, right?
I got something to say. We got the beat today.
So, what was everyone's favorite song from the album?
So Tonight was mine.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me see. I have another.
I love how like actually surprisingly surfy This Town was.
Yeah, This Town was my favorite.
Like if you took out the vocals, I was listening to it. I'm like, this could totally just be like a, like just instrumental surf rock track. And it would just slay even just as that.
Oh, I never even thought of it that way.
Oh yeah. Like it's total, like that real reverby, like the real like slow drawn out chords and like the single note melodies.
It's funny because I heard it as a rockabilly song. I was like, this could be sped up and be psychobilly or something.
There's a lot of overlap.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Between the serfs and the billies.
Yeah, the serfs. You mean the peasants in medieval Europe?
Well, it's funny you say that. It's funny you say that, too, because one of the old I guess it was a video, one of the old live videos I found of them, I think it was from 1978, they're playing a song called Beatnik Beach. I'm going to guess, I didn't look at it yet, but they put out like an album of like old rarities and stuff that I only like just realized existed the other day. So I haven't listened to it yet, but it's called like Return from the Valley of the Go-Go's or something like that.
A
bunch of like, it's like a bunch of old material. So maybe it's on that, but this was a very surfy song.
They did do Beatnik Beach as a produced song on their Vacation album.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah. That's their on their sophomore album. It's on there.
Nice. What's funny is the video that I found of them, there's like this little like opening thing where I forgot who it was from the band, like introduced it, probably Belinda, but like, she like talks to the camera, says we're the Go-Go's and we play secretary rock. And I was like, is that a thing or did they come up with that? And I looked it up and the only thing I could find was like an Urban Dictionary listing. And obviously this is a newer listing, so I don't know what the context would be for that Go-Go's clip, but the Urban Dictionary definition was something like boring corporate safe for work music or something like that. So like, it kind of made me wonder like if that term meant that back then and they were saying it sarcastically, or like if they were, you know, calling their music secretary rock with a whole different meaning. But I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah,
that's I would think it probably came from that, because around that time it seemed like people weren't getting super crazy on like genre labeling yet.
Sure But yeah, that's why it was funny, because I like hearing weird genres that exist.
Chewy, what was your favorite song from the album?
I'd have to say Lust for Love.
Okay.
I love the guitars on that one, with the direction that it's so much, I think, different from what's going on over the rest of the album.
Right.
It's because that intro guitar riff on Lust for Love is, it's kind of like the theme of the song that gets played over and over, and the song has a swell in the middle of it, which I really dig. And, I love the fact that they add a lot of three-part harmony in their music.
Yeah, that's the one thing I was going to ask you guys about, like how they harmonize, you know, they add all these different harmonies to the majority of their songs. And I feel like you guys kind of have a little similar things like that sometimes in your music.
I'll have to send you the video from Pit Dunst recording, because them doing the harmonies, I have that recorded. It is the greatest thing ever, because he can sing so many different octaves. He's hitting he's hitting the low. Like it's great.
That's cool.
Yours truly is responsible for all but three voices on that track.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Yeah, we should definitely release that as a B-reel or something.
I agree. That's promo already.
Yeah. So did Chewy, did you get to watch the documentary about them?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So on their documentary that they have, it came out in 2020, and it talks about their album, you know, because that's their debut album was Beauty and the Beat. And that at the time they were so broke. And so, you know, back then, like, album covers were like a huge thing. Like, you had to have like the coolest artwork and like the coolest idea for this album cover. Mm. And that their manager went and bought, like, they said they kind of wanted to keep it to where you weren't paying attention to their looks. So they came up with the idea that they would all put the face mask on with the towels, and that their manager had went and bought the towels from Macy's, and she went and returned them afterward because they couldn't afford them. So they did the photo shoot, and then she went and returned these towels.
Wow. They did the same thing with some of the chainsaws in Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they had such a low budget.
Yeah, but that's cool. And then also, because, you know, you hear their music and then it's like, it's so poppy and just like, and the way that they all looked and dressed and everything, but then it's like, they were total sluts and like drug addicts. Like, they were like coke all the time. And then the documentary, they talk a little bit, Charlotte, their main songwriter, like, she was doing heroin and like going and buying drugs, like in these dangerous neighborhoods. And she's like this huge pop star at the time. And yeah, so it's really crazy to think about that those women were just, you know, running on drugs and alcohol at the time.
But who wasn't back then?
Right.
It's what kept them going.
Yeah. Rigs a whole new name to the a whole new meaning to go-go's.
I know, right?
The little thing I was interested or I thought was cool to learn was how like Belinda was almost in The Germs.
Huh.
Did you see, really? Anybody see that? Yeah, she briefly was gonna, I forgot what she was gonna play, but she was gonna play something in The Germs and her like stage name was gonna be Dottie Danger.
Yeah.
But she got sick like right before they started performing. And so somebody jumped in instead of her and she never rejoined the band.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
So there you go. That's some LA punk cred right there.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I like what everyone's bringing different elements to this.
Yeah. If it's a weird fact, Robert's probably figured it out by now.
Well, and that's the thing is I was trying to remember if I read anything about them, and I read that there's this like oral history of punk rock book called Please Kill Me.
Uh-huh.
But there is some stuff in it about LA, but it mostly focuses on New York.
Sure.
And some of London, obviously, but it's mostly New York.
And any of the stuff that I'm sure it covers in LA is probably what like Black Flag and those bands, right?
Briefly, I think some of it too, they did like crossover because like, you know, everybody famous from New York spent some time in LA.
Sure.
Like Iggy Pop spent time in LA. And who else? They were covering like Louis Costello's time in LA, but yeah, I couldn't really remember anything I read about them. It probably just like mentioned them, you know, and stuff like that.
Probably.
It's interesting to, not to go too far off, but it's interesting to see a lot of the things that like cover LA or even Orange, like Southern California in general, punk, right? Because it's not like what Robert's saying, it's not typically the thing that, you know, comes out in the books or another documentary. Yeah. Usually, you know, New York. And then for hardcore, it's usually like the East Coast scene, but there's a lot of big important bands to come from Southern California, like basically anything with Rick Agnew, the Adolescents, DI, TSOL, like all that stuff, like huge importance, at least in, you know, my thought process and what punk sounds like now.
Yeah, I think that definitely the later punk influence, definitely LA had a huge, you know, like Pennywise came from Hermosa Beach and Black Flag. They were from, you know, the South Bay area as well in LA. And, you know, and they had like a ton of different singers besides Henry Rollins. So I definitely, but like the hardcore punk scene. Yeah, definitely. I started mostly in England and New York. So
apparently a main impactful part to get like the West Coast going in punk was the Damned coming over here. Just sort of a random, like they happened to come here and not anywhere else in the States at the time. And that like blew up the punk scene on the West Coast.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know that.
That's my random factoid. Thank you.
Your random factoid.
I don't remember if it was like the Ramones being on tour or just like hearing their record, but like there's a, like one of the bigger like San Diego punk bands from the 70s was called the Zeros.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very Ramonesy. They sound Ramonesy, but it is interesting. It was like, maybe it didn't start here, but you know, a lot of stuff happened here once it caught on.
Yeah. San Diego, and this is again, totally unrelated, I think, but San Diego's punk scene was big in that eventually it turned into like the like emo screamo thing, but like way before that was even a big thing, like the like Justin Pearson, Swing Kids, and all of his other bands, that's a big thing in San Diego apparently. It's like, okay, cool, you know that's what we're known for in music.
Something they did mention or point out, like, or at least it was someone's observation in that Please Kill Me book, was I don't remember who, but they were kind of pointing out how like LA wasn't afraid to get like really weird, like as far as punk music and stuff. And I think that that definitely shows in some of the weird variety in sound. And I don't know, maybe that even kind of like lends itself to, you know, having your first big all-female punk band like the Go-Go's coming from LA. Yeah. Because that's kind of breaking the mold too.
Right.
Sure.
Did that book talk about like CBGB and stuff like that?
Oh yeah, mostly. Max's Kansas City and stuff like that. And of course they spent like the first chapter was on like proto punk stuff, and it spent time in like, in Michigan. What's the city? Not Detroit. Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is like where Iggy Pop's from.
Okay.
Stuff like that. But yeah, it accumulated in New York in that book.
Yeah, I know we're like veering off of the Go-Go, but it's fine because it's a music podcast and, you know, it's just how the conversation goes sometimes. But the CBGB history to me is kind of interesting because, you know, it is a big punk venue known that where it was like people, that's where everyone wanted to get into. But then it's so crazy because it was so, you know, like in a way like, okay, well you need to be very punk to get in here. But then it's like people like Blondie came out of it, and you know, her music's, I don't really even know if you could kind of classify it punk. I mean, it's, there's a lot of waves of it, you know, that are different.
Sure.
And the talking,
it was more like punk ethos than anything.
Right. Yeah.
It came out of the movement.
It came out of the movement for sure. But, as far as, you know, sounding punk, her music isn't really super punk. And then like the Talking Heads came out of,
and the Police.
Oh,
the Police
really?
Also
oh,
came yeah. out of that too.
Of what?
Of the CBGB's punk scene. The Police did.
The Police?
They did.
I believe so, yeah. And then they played CBGB. I don't know if it was their main place, but I'm going to bring it back to my favorite band. They Might Be Giants came out of the punk scene too.
Really?
Yeah. Like the New York art / punk scene. Like they were my favorite, like, quote, I think it was from one of the main guys from Flansburg, was something like, they were too artsy for the punk scene and they were too rowdy and punk for the art scene.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Anyway,
I think Robert needs to put a dollar in the jar.
I know, I got to put a dollar in the jar for bringing up They Might Be Giants.
But, sucker.
I still need to listen to that podcast that's totally, that you told me, that's all on They Might Be Giants.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We, like, do deep dives into all the things.
We recorded a They Might Be Giants cover that's going to be on a compilation by the guy who hosts that podcast.
Oh. But,
it's a good cover, too.
Hell yeah.
Like, I am very, and this, I don't mean this in a rude way to They Might Be Giants or to us in the past, but like just the way it came out is so good. I was very surprised.
It's pretty bomb.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts was like literally not hearing the original until basically like almost the end. Because Robert was done with like the basic idea. We'd like tool around with it. And I kept going, I'm like, no, I want to do as much of this as possible without actually hearing the original.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so just to make it like even more like different.
You recorded that for that podcast?
Well, no, the guy who hosts that podcast has been organizing like charity compilations.
Oh,
and
okay.
He's done like one or two.
Like a compilation album, like of covers from other bands?
Just They Might Be Giants covers by other bands, yeah.
That's so cool.
So the project's been delayed just because of life things with him, but it's going to happen this year.
That's
I
really
assume.
Cool.
But yeah.
Well, yeah.
So to bring it back to the Go-Go's, my favorite song on the album is You Can't Walk in Your Sleep.
Mm, that was a cool song too. I like that
one. That was like my third.
Yeah.
That was my third choice.
Yeah, I like This Town. That one's my favorite out of, and it's funny because like to hear you guys talk about your favorites and why, it's interesting because it's like, I think that for me personally, when I listen to music, it's the lyrics. Mm. The lyrics are what draws me. It's like, do I relate to this? Is this the story of my life? You know, it's all about the lyrics. And, but then, you know, some people like with Chewy, he totally listened to the guitar and, you know, in Lust for Love, like, it's like, he knew that what he was listening for in that. And so, yeah, so kind of what drew you guys to your favorites? I mean, I know Chewy did talk about his, but you guys didn't really talk about what, like, drew you to that song to be your favorite. Was it the instruments, like a formula of the song, the harmonics? Like, what was it?
Well, I think for me, Lust for Love was the fact that it was like almost completely different from, you know, because you got the first, you know, you obviously got the first track, which is Our Lips Are Sealed, I believe.
Yeah.
First track.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that song.
Right.
Every year. Heard that a million times. But then you've got the next two songs where you really start to see the progression of effects on the guitars being used.
Oh, okay.
And when you get to Lust for Love, you've got reverb, you've got delay, and then you've got this point in the song where it actually swells to a large crescendo, and then they drop everything out. And that's what really drove me to that song. I really love that song. And that song, and then Automatic was the other one that really drew me to those two, because they're similar in Automatic, where you actually start to hear more of tremolo and vibrato being used on the guitars in the song. And I think that's so interesting because it's similar to us, how we kind of like exploded onto the punk scene in San Diego with a completely different sound.
Right.
Altogether. You know, we've gotten many, many people that come up to us after shows. They're like, I wasn't expecting to hear a 5-minute blues song at a punk show.
Right.
I really like you guys. I want to, you know, follow you guys and stuff. So I think that's just interesting to me when I see bands that actually push the envelope of what's being played in the scene at the time. And that's what I totally dug out. I was like, oh, okay, she chose to go. That's sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that's amazing that you got all of that out of that. Yeah, I wasn't sure, you know, when Robert had approached me about this I was like, how do I want to take this? But then I was like, you know what? Let's just do the Go-Go's because, like I said, it was that they started punk. And then I wanted to see if you guys could relate and hear anything in their music that kind of still had a punk formula to it. So it's really cool to hear, especially because you guys didn't grow up on it like I did. So like, I like hearing your opinions about it and all the facts that you found.
Oh boy. I like a lot of their bass lines. Like just when you like focus on the bass line of Our Lips Are Sealed, that's like a really nice line. And my second favorite song was How Much More. And I love the bass in that one even more. It kind of makes me think of the bass that I like to write, like, especially in the context of punk, like, you know, it's not just following the root notes or something like that. It's kind of like dancing around.
Oh, okay.
Dang, you beat me to it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you thinking the same exact thing?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, just like a watered down version. Like I thought it was going to be like, mine is like a watered down version. It's I thought it was going to be like mostly root notes, but first song on there, Our Lips Are Sealed. Immediately, I'm like, oh, nope, she's actually riffing.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
really good. Yeah.
I think for me,
it makes your shoulders do this.
I think for me, it was like I had said, I went in thinking that they were or of the opinion that, oh, they're just an older punk band, like stylistically. Right. Uh-huh. And so really, you had said, like, was it the formula, hearing that formula? I think that's what it was for me.
Right.
Like I said, I could kind of hear maybe some of their influence on other bands. I didn't realize they were from LA. So now it makes sense that they may have influenced some of the bands in the scene at the time, you know, or later in the scene.
Right.
So hearing that, and I already have, or at least think that I have the, sort of pop sensibilities as far as like formulating music goes. So I was already, you know, I think hearing it that way was picking up on that.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah. And going back to the baseline, what's cool is that you guys really picked up on that because in the documentary, Kathy Valentine talks about when she, because they had a different bassist first and then they kicked her out because she was kind of like not into it. And Kathy Valentine really wanted to be in their band, but she played guitar. She didn't play bass. And so she had to teach her how to play bass and that she kind of changed a little bit of the bass sound, in their songs. So, and she did it on a Coke bender. Like, I guess that, Charlotte brought her a cassette of their demos and was like, okay, you know, we have a gig coming up, so you have 3 days to learn this. And I guess she just did coke for 3 days to learn and teach herself the bass of her songs.
Isn't that kind of like Kenny? I mean, not the coke part, but
as far as you know,
the like being a guitar player and becoming a bassist.
Yeah. And then it's weird. Like I play guitar for like 12 years not that much progression. They're like, hey, join the band. Okay. Start tooling around on bass for like a few weeks. And I'm like, I am so much better at this than the guitar. What the hell?
Yeah. So then
fun fact, Kenny was a guitarist.
So when you joined the Rockers, Kenny
still was is.
Was it like, oh, here, learn all these songs.
Yeah. I was already pretty decent at just like learning things by ear. So when I showed up for like the first like audition, we just jumped in, messed around on a few and we're like, all right, cool. Just polish it up and we're good to go.
That was a weird, really thinking about it, that was sort of a weird process. That, like when we think about it now, or when I think about it now, because we were like about to go into the studio and it was like, Kenny had already learned the first EP, which was the four songs. Uh-huh. And then we practiced those and we're like, okay, cool. We're going to be in the studio. Here's some demos. Like it was kind of like that almost. Here are the demos of the songs we want you to learn if you want to play them on bass for us and that on that.
Because like originally I was just going to play the bass for that recording, but I'm glad Kenny was on it instead.
Yeah.
Probably better.
And we were able to write the Devil Mask songs with him.
Yeah.
And the one bass riff in Devil Mask Defeated, that was like morphed from like a stoner doom riff that I was holding on to for like 2 years and never did anything with. Rigger's doing the do, but I was like, wait, did lean, shift it down, did lean, did, there it is.
You're like, guys, I've had this in my back pocket forever.
Oh yeah. No, it almost felt like scripted, because I remember all the rest of y'all plus 1K and Jake also, we're all huddled like around like the screen around the computer. I'm sitting behind the rest of you on the couch, and then suddenly I busted out the din. You all slowly turn your heads and you're all like, that works.
Yeah, I remember like that day, like really clicking with Ken musically. Yeah. Where it was like, okay, yeah, that's a sweet riff, but we got to finish it out. And put this little tagline at the end and it'll be fine. And he's like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I remember like that. I added like one or two other notes. You're like, no, take those out and end it like right here. I'm like, why? That's dumb. Okay, never mind. It's awesome.
That's dumb.
That's dumb, dude. Never mind. It's awesome, bro.
That's the one thing that I love about you guys too, is that I could tell you guys are very close. And I mean, the fact that you guys went on a van tour and you didn't kill each other, that's amazing.
Yeah, we recognize each other by smell now.
I almost did. I was ready to kill everybody.
Robert was being pissy for a day, and Ken completely shut down for a little while, but we made it through. Yeah. We had to. What was the song that we had to listen to like four times because Robert was being a dick?
Safety dance.
Oh, yeah. There wasn't even, it's like whatever version it was, there wasn't even a fade out. It ends the same way it starts. So when you're in a van and we're all talking through the Nevada desert, it's, I don't know, maybe 120 degrees, give or take two. And he's passed out in the back. We can't just reach back and get his phone to stop.
No, he's pretend to be passed out.
I was pretending to be passed out because I didn't know that at the time.
I mean, you're playing Safety Dance, the song from Men Without Hats. Like,
yeah, you can dance if you want to.
Yeah, there was no fade out. It just kept like looping. And after a while, I was like, this is a lot longer than I remember.
Yeah, we all had that moment of like, wait a minute. Has it just been playing?
It was like when it started playing for the third time, they're like, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah. And then at that point, we're like, dude, I'd rather just listen to the radio. And all we could get out there was like country songs. And Rick and I were like, no. And Chewy was just like, yeah.
No. We couldn't get anything. That was the issue. We couldn't change it because there was no radio service.
When we could finally change it to something, it was just country. We're like,
I don't remember that.
That was the leg of the driving that Ken was driving. And I remember talking to Robert. I was like, you should just play that song, Safety Dance, over and over again, because we had just listened to the comedy skit of John Mulaney, where he's talking about the guy who plays
Salt and Pepper Diner.
He says he plays seven plays of that What's New Pussycat.
Over and over again.
I was like, you should do that with Safety Dance. And Robert started doing it.
I thought we listened to the Mulaney skit because of that. I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I was mad for some reason. And so I said, well, fuck them. I'm just going to play this song on loop.
I'm going to torture them with safety dance.
And pretend to go to sleep.
here and there, like, and I love remembering all like the little moments of when we got pissy with each other just because now it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, bro, yeah, like at one point we're like unloading the drums and everything. Rick, you know what's happening. So we're unloading the drums and all that. And I'm like, hey man, is it cool if I just set this on top of this drum? And just this like resting bitch face and this tone that he gives me for a second. And he's like, I hit them, Ken. And I almost just slam his drum down. I'm like, fine. Is that fine? We're all tired, dehydrated, and feel like shit.
I didn't even know he said that.
I hit them, Ken.
I hit them, Ken. And I was just, is that fine?
Like, we can dance if we want to.
Yeah, right. I think in reflection about that from the final moment, one of my favorite parts is, as dumb as it is that we all got on stage for the end of the tour, right? And bowed and said, good soup. Like, yeah. We all did that and bowed, and I'm like, that is the best way to wrap up this,
this event. Well,
how did you
that's
guys
the, that's get... the last scene before the credits on the tour DVD.
Yeah,
good,
yeah.
Soup.
That's your inside joke, and I obviously have heard, like, I haven't heard how the story started, but it's like now whenever you guys are sick, I'm like, you want me
to... I don't know how it started. I never knew how it started.
It was I think it was just Robert started it because it was a meme.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, I know it was a meme, but I thought you had started saying it because it was a TikTok meme at the time. And then at some point we just kept saying it to each other. And then during the shows, I'd go up to people that we were friends with and I'd be like, hey, tell Chewy good soup. And and that was, I don't know. It was just
that's the thing I like
all time.
Chewy keeps these jokes going. I think a lot of times,
yeah,
there's like an even older thing, like pre-band. Like I showed him this video that has the line, hell yeah, Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Still says that. He still says that.
Oh, hell on yeah, one of Batman. The on one of the recordings that we did, like actually, like in the studio before it got like finally like polished up and cut. Right at the end of one of the takes, Bucketchew goes Rex salad. we still say that here and there after we have like.
What song was like, that? I forgot. Salad.
Oh, I can't remember. It might have been Halloween Inside.
Okay.
Down Rex salad. And I was we should just keep that in there.
Was it? Because I know there was a song too where like at the end of the take, I go, all right, that's fine.
No, we almost kept that too. What was that? Was that Halloween Inside?
That was Halloween Inside, but specifically you stated, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, that's nice.
Well, that's nice. And I was like, keep it. This would be awesome. At the end. Release it as an extended edition.
Going back to maintaining the joke, we kept doing the look at this graph, like it was the Nickelback meme where it's like look at this photograph, but it's look at this graph, and it would be thrown into the playlist when I was driving, and I'm just there driving, busting out laughing the entire like almost every time that it happened.
We almost crashed a couple of times because I was driving.
Oh, no.
You were the one on the playlist.
So was it when it wasn't whoever was driving was in charge of the playlist, it was just whomever.
No, it was co-pilot. Yeah,
we had requests, but most of the time it was co-pilot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like there's that time that not to make this all about the old tour we did, but like there was that drive from the Bay Area up to Portland.
Yeah,
that we started early in the morning, and Kenny and Chewy are asleep in the back, and me and Rick are up in the front, and it's dark and it's misty, foggy, and we're playing like old school cruise tunes,
yeah,
like lowrider cruise tunes, and just G-funk. Vibing the hell out of it.
Oh,
and then Kenny wakes up Kenny wakes up and he's like, play the new Ghost song.
They were like, damn, Ken.
Dude,
way to ruin the mood.
Dude, like my... Yeah, I didn't care, man. Dude, like my eyes like peeked open. I opened Facebook and the first thing is like, hey, a new Ghost song that's going to be in Halloween Kills. I'm like, play it now.
And then after that, we said, no more requests. I forgot what our stipulation was, but we were like, no more interrupting the cruise mood.
And then we went cruise up until we got closer to Portland when we lost service and had to start listening to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
The movie soundtrack.
Dude, that was awesome, though.
That was perfect. I still tell people about that.
Yeah, it was great.
Dude, I tell people about that. I told about a coworker that likes he's all about traveling. I was telling him about it last week. I still tell people about it all the time. Yeah,
it was the mountains were beautiful. It was like
we literally had a soundtrack for it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. How many times did you have to listen to They Might Be Giants?
I think why we have a jar.
It was halfway through the tour,
I gave up. I think halfway through the tour, I conceded. What'd you say, Rick?
I think it was on the way to from. Where were we? From Orange County, somewhere in between Orange County and Arizona, we listened to that and Tom Waits.
Yeah,
and maybe it was just Tom Waits, but
After that, I just played things people would like.
After a while, like a few days, maybe like two, three days into the tour or something like that. Suddenly, Chewy was like, I'm pretty sure you were driving, but Rick's like, all right, anybody request? I really don't want to listen to the MIP Giants. Chewy's just like literally anything but the MIP Giants.
Or safety dance.
I think I told them that. I think I was like, I'd rather listen to safety dance.
Oh, no.
I was helping one of my friends make a playlist for her birthday party, and most of the people were like in their 50s and... So she wanted to make like a cool, you know, new wave style playlist and stuff. And she's like, I was thinking of putting some of They Might Be Giants on there. And I'm like, well, I mean, if everyone's into that type of music, then I think they'll like it. And she's like, okay. And so she was making the playlist. And then the next time I saw her, I was like, how's your bonfire go? Did everyone like the playlist? And she's like, when Istanbul came on, like, everyone was like, what is this?
There's only like three songs you can put on a playlist like that and get away with it. It's like Don't Let Start, Birdhouse in Your Soul, and probably Puppet Head. That's it. That's all you can get away with.
Randomly throwing in They Might Be Giants into a playlist. That's like that guy at the party that just totally kills the vibe by busting out the acoustic for Wonderwall.
Right.
You mean the guy who invited you to his house so that he could do that?
Well, since you're all here, this is the story, yeah. Girl.
So pretty much if Robert has a house party, we all know what we're in for.
But it's accordion.
Yes.
I pulled out the accordion at a birthday party of mine once when I had a bunch of people. And I played I Will Survive.
Nice.
Like the disco song.
Nice.
Yeah. And that went over pretty well, I think.
I
had my one friend Dominique had never been to my house before. She brought like two friends with her and they were freaking out when I played that.
They're like, your friend is so cool.
Well, her one like gay friend hit on me, so probably.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, well, we'll go ahead and end the show here. Thanks, guys, for being on. And I know that it always goes somewhere else, but it's always fun. And, I mean, that was another thing that we didn't ever get to talk about with you guys before was your tour. So we did have something else to talk about with you.
Thank you for having us. We always love being on.
Yeah, totally.
I know. I'm like, I would have you on more often, but I'm like, this is going to be just like a Writers podcast.
That's why I suggested the idea to talk about something specific besides ourselves.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. That was a really cool idea. So So then your single comes out on the 10th as well?
Yes. It's streaming exclusively on Bandcamp on February 10th. And okay. That's when we have a new enamel pin of the Pit Dunce cap that's also dropping that day too.
Okay.
If you buy the enamel pin, you get a download of the song along with it.
Oh, cool.
And then the following week on February 17th, it hits all the other popular streaming services, Spotify, Apple Music, et cetera. And there'll be a lyric video too.
Oh, that's cool. And so all your merch is it just strictly on Bandcamp?
Yes. Our little shop's based on Bandcamp. Yeah.
Okay. So people can buy the Pit Dunce pin is just if they want to buy it, right?
Yeah. They don't just have to come to the show. They can order it.
Okay, cool. And then your show is on the 10th at the Kensington Club.
Yes.
Okay. And then where can people find you guys?
Pretty much everywhere as The Writhers, all one word. That's Thewriters. The Writhers, not The Writhers, not The Worthers.
Not The Wraithers.
Yeah.
Guys, The Wraithers.
Before we wrap, can we do the, can we say our genre all together?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. The timing's always weird on the internet, but let's try it.
That's why it's fun. Okay. Horror punk.
Dude,
you counted to five.
All right, let's do it again. I'm going to count you down.
Okay.
In 3, 2, 1.
Horror punkabilly death rock and roll.
Yeah.
That's our genre.
That was horror punkabilly death rock and roll, just in case no one got that. Check out the hashtag.
Yeah, it's all us.
Yeah. And thank you, listeners, for listening to another episode of the Local Treble Club.